Yeah, he's our favorite nerd. And now, with a quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have a bunch in store for you here on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Let's start off talking about Keith M. Sidor. He's going to talk with me about his iFixit toolkit. Marty, how components have changed and why it's so hard to be a hobbyist. And Steve Kasky, do you think we can colonize Mars? I've got some listener questions as well. Sean asks for tips for Black Friday shopping. Charlie, about the state of digital cameras versus smartphones. And Larry asks about technology. Is it bad? Is it not bad? Along the way, we also have the scam series Robocalls. Well, they're obvious traps. I'll play one for you. The 70-hour work week idea from Infosys is, well, I think it's overreach. That's really what it is. And I also have a review on the Synology B station and some Black Friday sale information that they have going on. All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. That'll be scattered across the 2 hours. If you miss any of it, you can check out the podcast at computertalkradio.com. Computertalkradio.com. Of course, the phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373. 888. You can ask me your computer questions, your technology concerns at either location. Again, computertalkradio.com or the phone number 888-NERD-888. Let's dive into the news, the tech news from the past week. And I think there's going to be a little bit of a shift. I think more nerds everywhere are going to be paying attention to football, or at least Netflix next month. Okay, I don't follow pugilism, that's boxing, in case you weren't aware, or football, what we call American football, a whole lot. Netflix aired a fight between Mike Tyson, I know that name, and somebody named Jake Paul, who I guess he's an influencer, I'm not quite sure. Maybe I'm out of touch on that one. Anyways, it was boxing, so I didn't really bother with it. However, the Netflix streaming problems that they had going on through this entire live stream scared a lot of people who are wondering what's going to happen with two Christmas Day football games that Netflix has lined up. Funny enough, I heard more water cooler gossip about how bad the streaming was versus the actual fight. Now, I didn't even know who won until I actually looked it up for myself later on. Now, okay, this is a streaming problem. This is going to be kind of a network problem. So I think Netflix is probably scrambling to shore up their network routers, their infrastructure, and whatever else. And they're going to be checking to ensure that a repeat doesn't happen. But from a computer perspective, this kind of problem takes time and testing to resolve. Netflix has a lot riding on this big bet for live streaming. Now, I definitely like my Amazon Echo devices. I've got a number of Amazon shows, the little 5-inch ones, and a number of these various Echo devices throughout my smart home. Now, this past week, Amazon announced a 15-inch and a 21-inch version of the Echo Show. So I was both intrigued, but also thrown off a little. All right, so first up, these are massive screens. They've got a singular purpose. And yeah, they could be good for the smart home obsessive, but I struggle here. Okay, so yes, they bumped up the audio. They upgraded to Wi-Fi 6E. They've got cool camera upgrades. They're throwing in Matter and a few other things to really improve the connectivity. Now, where was I thrown off? Well, it's the price tag. $300 or $400, depending on which size you're going for something that really, it probably has a 5-year shelf life. This is also coming from a company that's already taken efforts to dial back their infrastructure for. They've already announced, this was about earlier this year, or maybe it was late last year, that they're kind of struggling with this whole Amazon Echo stuff. It wasn't really providing the payoff that they were hoping for. Okay, so perhaps they know their customer base, and perhaps it can be a good product for some people. I'm just having a hard time seeing this. Now, do you remember that old TV show called Name That Tune? Yeah, you'd be given a little bit of information, you get a little bit of the music, and you'd have to name that tune. Okay, it was kind of interesting back then, but today it's now all in our smartphones. Apple offered up a fun bit of trivia this week. How much has Shazam, that's what they use in the iPhone for the song recognition, how often has it been used? Over 100 billion times since 2002, and about 30 billion just since 2022. That's a lot of music. A lot of listening around the world, with an equivalent of everyone asking 12 times to listen to whatever tune that might be playing and to, yes, name that tune. What they don't point to in their announcement is how it's now built into Siri on the iPhone. And yes, it's a handy feature. And naturally, how Apple uses this to drive people to their music streaming services. So it's surely gained back whatever they spent on it, and then some. Microsoft has a new desktop that was announced this past week. The $350 Windows 11 PC sounds initially like something of interest to people who think, I'll rush on out, I'll go buy it, it's going to save me money. Instead, however, this is a venture into the virtual Windows space. That is really, it's where the computer doesn't reside locally. It resides remotely. Okay, so this is really only aimed at enterprise-level customers. Windows 365 Link, that's the name of the new desktop, is really a window to all of these virtual machines that reside on Microsoft servers, and it's really only for business use. These virtual machines have a price to them as well, so $350 for the little desktop. However, you're going to pay $31 to $66 a month, depending on what grade of this virtual machine you're going to work with. Over the course of 3 years, that's nearly $1,500 on up to over $2,700 for a machine that you don't even own. Sure, you have the hardware, but without the virtual machine hosted by Microsoft, it actually turns into a useless paperweight. Now, it's very early in the Department of Justice plans for the breakup of Google. This past week, the Department of Justice launched their first big salvo. The request, filed with Amit Mehta late on Wednesday, was for Google to sell off the Chrome browser along with a number of other recommendations. This is the opening portion of this, and with around 66% of the worldwide market share for browsers across all platforms, the valuation, well, somebody has said it might be worth up to $20 billion. Now, I struggle with that valuation, but only because Google offers Chrome for free, just like all of the other competitors with their own browsers. So this is still in the proposal phase, and it doesn't go to the next trial phase, the remedy phase, until April of next year. Now, how this all plays out could be very interesting, and it could impact us all. So we here at Computer Talk Radio, we're going to be focused on this. We're going to be tracking this all the way along. And there's a lot of other things that are recommendations. Who knows what's going to actually happen with Amit Mehta, but it'll be an interesting ride. Now, a week after a 2 billion ton discovery proof of rare earth metals in Wyoming, Japan stepped up. They announced a similar success with what now seems to be a small win of 230 million tons. And okay, it's not so much of a win because it's down at 18,000 feet underwater. So again, that's not much of a win because so far, China has the record for the deepest operations with a test they did just earlier this year at 13,000 feet, or about 5,000 feet shy of where all of this stuff is. China says their system can go down to that depth, 18,000 feet, but then other factors start just creeping in. What are the recovery costs for this rare earth metals? The speed of operation. How is this going to work out over the long haul versus standard land-based mining? I'm not discouraged, but it may be a long time before anyone recovers any value other than bragging rights on this discovery. Coming up next, Larry asks me, is technology bad? And I answer here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Larry has a question, and I'm going to address that question here in a moment because it's a longer question, and this is one to really, this is in defense of technology, at least my answer is. The website, by the way, where Larry reached out is ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can do it too. I enjoy all of the different comments and advice and different things that people send me. So feel free to reach out to me. I do enjoy it. So Larry's question, technology isn't all that it's cracked up to be. I think it's likely to make people weaker, lazy, into couch potatoes. Why is there such a push by everyone to embrace this? And I'll tell you, it was a bit longer than this. He did go into a couple of different things, and I did enjoy it, and I did respond to him. But I wanted to spend some time here, and I wanted to reflect for perhaps a minute or two in regards to what we think of as technology. And what we think of as technology is really the latest in a long line, a long series of different improvements that we have made within our lives. And I will tell you, one of the bits and pieces of technology that I hold to, that I think about when I start thinking about the beginning of technology. I'm not going to go back to the wheel. I'm not going to go back to fire. And I'm not going to go towards the invention of written language. I'm going to go a little bit further forward. I'm going to go to right around 1450. A gentleman by the name of Johannes Gutenberg printed up somewhere in the neighborhood of about 150 to 180 Bibles in a new concept at that time, a technological concept called movable type. He is credited as being the first major user of that particular process, that particular technology And yeah, there's arguments as to whether he was the first or whatever. I don't worry about that. He was the man who made the mark on the world by printing up this large amount of Bibles using a brand new technology that most people hadn't thought about. And he enabled the spread of the word, the gospel, the Bible throughout the world much faster than it had ever been done before. Up until that point in time, every Bible was handwritten. I want you to think about how long it takes to handwrite, to copy the Bible, meticulously copy the Bible from one to another by hand. That takes a lot. So let's dive into all of the different things that have come along since then. We've got the electric light bulb. That's technology. We have electricity in almost all of our homes, as well as natural gas, as well as internet, as well as a number of other things that are technology. Look, I get it. It's really natural for all of us to be concerned about the impact of technology on our individual and our collective lifestyle. You can wonder about and you can think about how this might be hitting you and your interpersonal relationships. Larry reached out to me via email. I mean, that is technology. That is modern technology. It's existed since, I think it was in the mid-80s, early 80s, when the first MCI mail started up. And that was a commercial service, and there were messages sent around on the precursor to the internet prior to then. I want us to embrace technology as a tool. The greater idea of technology is it should simplify tasks and it should create more free time for meaningful activities. I'll tell you, Johannes Gutenberg, he probably spent quite a bit of time printing the Bible. Along through there, he also read the Bible. He copied it from wherever he copied it from into those individual letters that he moved into that movable type to print up each printed page of that Bible. But that's a more meaningful activity that he did along the way. And we can embrace that tool in a number of different ways. We can, I'll tell you, when I go to church, I will look up Bible verses as they're being preached from the stage right there in context, and I get a number of different varieties of the Bible, and I get the ability to look up in various commentaries what is the deeper aspect of what we're talking about. And I may get into some rabbit holes along the way. Maybe that's not so good, but the overall learning of the Bible in this particular case is just one thing that technology enables right there at my fingertips. Throughout my home, I've got a number of smart home devices. They automate mundane tasks. They allow me to turn off a number of lights all at once, allowing me to focus on other activities that may bring me joy and fulfillment. And I can set various mood lighting colors and dim the lights when I'm watching television, things like that, rather than going around to each of the individual switches and turning off whichever ones I want. And that really enables me. It helps me. Now, that does mean that we need to make conscious efforts to balance our usage of technology, and we need to balance that technology against, yes, those face-to-face interactions and those activities that will foster connection. And we think Facebook, oh, that's fostering connection, that's fostering communication. It isn't. It's a place where we can doom scroll, and maybe that isn't all that great, but that's up to us to restrain ourselves, to think about the activities that we're doing and the activities that we're not doing. We need to be engaging with people face to face. We need to be having those conversations, sometimes very tough conversations, instead of looking at all of the sunshine and roses and puppy dogs and kitty cats that somebody has posted. Along the way, like in the smart home, I can encourage myself to take breaks, to engage in healthy habits like exercise or Bible reading, or yes, of course, reminding me to take out the garbage. This is up to us to leverage what is there, all of these different tools in all of these different directions to better ourselves. I want to encourage everybody. You need to be thinking about, is what I'm doing with technology enabling me to enhance my life? And that may include things like enhancing my hobbies, learning new skills, engaging in projects that are more collaborative rather than individualistic. This is really good. This technology that is here before us is something that's really wonderful. I'll tell you, the Amish, you would think, okay, they don't like technology at all. No, they have gone forward and they have embraced the idea of, yes, limited amounts of cell phones, limited, not very fancy, websites to promote their businesses. They've advanced into different areas of technology, what we might consider primitive technology, to better their lives, to better their dealing with the outside world. Yeah, sometimes they use intermediaries to do certain things which they say are a little bit too far, a little bit too much for them right now. But they are coming along. Technology in our lives, in our home, is like having a personal assistant who takes care of time-consuming chores that free us up. All of those tasks we offload give us the ability to pursue meaningful experiences and, yes, maintain strong connections with those that we love. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. I'll be more than happy to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. Keith McCedor joins me now. And Keith, I got something in the mail. I got the iFixit toolkit. All right, actually, this is one of the iFixit toolkits. They've got a few.
Yes.
I understand that you've got the full-fledged, the big, huge, monster version of this kit. I like this one that they sent
me. I do, Benjamin.
This is a little bit more of a limited edition. It's more limited in the amount of items that it has. Mm-hmm. Yours has, I don't even know the specs on yours. How many bits does it have?
Oh, that's a good question, Benjamin, because I don't think I've counted them recently, because I actually got this as a Christmas gift from my wife for my Apple consulting practice, and I've had it for about 3 years now, and I can tell you it's been absolutely indispensable. Now, having eyeballed your kit versus mine, I believe the number of bits is approximately the same, but there's an extra fold because you've got this hard shell bit case with all these different screw bits, including crazy things like Apple's proprietary, you know, tri-wing screws and things that you could never get anywhere else before iFixit made them. And there's an extra flap with extra tools. Like, I think it includes two spudgers instead of one. It includes some extra.
I've got two spudgers. I've got a variety of spudgers. So these blue ones here, these are spudgers, but these are used for, you could use these on pulling apart any kind of plastic case, really. And then we've got this one that looks like a pencil on one end, and it's got a hook on the other end, kind of a hook thing.
And right.
What is this one used for?
Hold that up again, Benjamin. That is actually a spudger. So I would use that for anytime I need to get into a place where I don't want to risk scratching the finish on an Apple product, I will use that because it is made of a high quality but flexible nylon.
So you wouldn't use the blue ones for that?
Correct.
Okay. This is a nice case overall, and this is something that I'll tell you. You know, with the gift giving season right now, we got Black Friday coming up. I have no idea what kind of sales they're going to be running on these things. It's still worth checking into because iFixit. You and I can both attest to the fact that iFixit has been really good for the right to repair community. We've had them on.
They really have.
Once or twice talked with them in regards to all of that.
Mm-hmm. We have. In fact, one of the things I like about this kit, and not as much anymore do I find myself using them, but I did when I first got the kit, when a lot of people still were using iPods.
Yeah.
There are some blue tools that are nylon that look like they're kind of like spudgers, but shorter and thicker.
Yeah.
And those are perfect for prying open the sides of the classic iPod so you can swap out the battery or even the hard drive if necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things that I do a lot with this toolkit is I replace hard drives and upgrade memory in iMacs, both 21.5-inch memory. Both the 21.5-inch iMac and the 27-inch iMac. The 27-inch iMac makes the upgrade of the memory a little easier, but the real key to it is that you will have adhesive holding on the display. And one of the things I've actually added to the toolkit that didn't come with it is this little pizza cutter wheel that is used that you wedge in between the frame and the screen.
Sure.
And you run up along the sides. It literally looks like a little micro pizza cutter where the wheel of the pizza cutter would be about maybe that width of a nickel, but the thinness of a blade. And again, it's also made of nylon like the spudger. And I actually stick that in where the wide-handled blade goes. And those are necessary for removing the adhesive on those iMacs. But if you happen to be replacing the hard drive on an older iMac, one of the ones that still has the optical drive, there is a suction cup that is used to remove the front glass, and then that exposes eight screws, which are either Torx or hex. I haven't opened one in a little while, so it's been a minute.
Yeah,
but all of those bits are included in the iFixit toolkit, and I want to say there's probably at least 65, if not more, bits in this kit. I mean,
so mine is a smaller one. I've only got about 32 of these, something like
that. Yeah, I'm looking at my bits here, and without 30. Actually counting them manually, there's seven across, there's nine rows. There's at least 63 bits in here.
Yeah.
And it's a very high quality bit driver made of, you know, really nice metal. It's got a knurled, handle on it, so you get a good grip on it. I just love it. It's one of the greatest assets to what I, the work I do when I have to get inside somebody's Mac.
I will tell you, I've relied on iFixit.com, that's their website, for a long time for their step-by-step guides. And the thing is growing. They've got somewhere over 100,000 manuals online. So if you're repairing... You're repairing a dishwasher. You know what? Actually, my my washing machine, I went to go find out how to pull it apart, and they had the manual online.
So, oh, yeah. They're all inclusive. It's great.
Yeah. They've got cars and household items and various other things. They are they're a great resource.
They really are. I enjoy having these tools and their online repair guides.
Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. I'm more than happy to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. We have a wonderful amount of conversations on a regular basis here at Computer Talk Radio. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, you know, I was just thinking the other day about when I worked back at Radio Shack.
Radio Shack.
I was on the front lines. I know you were off in some.
Oh, I did, but no, I did both. I worked in a store as well.
Oh, really? Okay, I always envisioned
years before I was a headquarters exec.
All right.
Yeah. And believe me, there's no promotion path that gets you from one to the other.
I remember all of the components that we used to carry, and it's unfortunate that the world of hobbyists and obtaining some of these different components is a lot harder these days.
Oh, you know, back in the 70s, I was writing tons of construction project articles for the newsstand electronics magazines. And solderless breadboards made that a little bit easier, but we're still not dealing with super tiny parts back then. Mm-hmm. These days, I just got in 15,000. Now imagine in the old Radio Shack days, 15,000 resistors would have been 7,500 cards with bubbles on the front,
yes,
hanging on a peg, right?
If you needed that many, we would have to special order that. You'd wait a few weeks, and it would arrive in a big, huge, big monster box
with lots of bubble wrap.
Actually, at that point,
and it would smell like chili for some reason.
Yeah, weird things. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I just got 15,000 resistors on a manufacturing reel used in the automated pick and place machines. That's the size of a small pizza, only thinner.
That looks like the personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut, except actually it's a thin crust. It looks like
Yeah, well, it's 7 inches diameter. Yeah. It's 3/8 of an inch thick.
Yeah, thin crust.
And in the middle.
I was hungry for a minute there. Can you tell?
Let me check that hole in the middle because it's bigger than any donut. The hole in the middle measures 2 inches.
Okay.
Actually, more like 2 1/4. So, you know, they put these on reels and they program, goes there and goes faster than I can, and
sure,
it's done.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's what they're building them for now. They're little tiny cubes and they the surface mount. And believe me, if you had a soldering iron small enough to get between this little epoxy package and the board to solder it, you still couldn't.
Yeah.
Surface mounting is its own thing. Also got in, and I love these little things. They're less than a penny each. Some little two-piece closed-end things that you can poke wire into.
Okay.
And it won't let go, and it'll connect it to another wire. It's got two places to poke in. You poke them both in, and they're connected. Splicing. You remember what it used to take?
Like wire nuts. Okay. Yeah.
Remember what it used to take to splice wires? Remember when you did it by spiraling one around the other and then soldering and then covering it with tape?
Yes. Yeah. And then there was the crimp connectors.
Crimp connectors. And then
they would always let go.
Oh, every time. And these days, it's... The marvelous Wago connector from Switzerland.
Yes.
Love those things. Love them. Anyway, but splicing.
But at a penny a piece on those, that's a lot cheaper than the Wago connectors.
A lot cheaper than anything, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I had a particular challenge I was looking at for design.
Mm-hmm.
And it involved, initially, a motion sensor.
Yeah.
But the motion sensor had to come from a friendly country. It couldn't come from anywhere else.
Okay.
And the motion sensor I had came from brand M, and it said made in Japan, but it wasn't. It was made in Thailand, so I couldn't use it.
Okay, understood.
Now, I was going to use two of those because you had to add lenses to them, and they were fairly primitive, I was going to do a cross the X, so you're only looking at one guy kind of thing. And no, that was out the window. I was also going to run the whole thing on 12 volts and use analog circuits, op amps, comparators, high 55 timers, right?
Oh, all of that. Yeah.
and ultimately go through a FET to switch in an electromechanical relay. Chunk, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I found a substitute part, which Panasonic has, and the Panasonic part is brilliant. It comes with the lens already integrated. The first parts of the logic are integrated. It's a 5-volt part, and it's got a logic state out, so it goes right into, of all things, a microcontroller. Doesn't that make sense?
Okay, all right, yeah.
Where I could also deal with the timing just by telling it how big a number to count up to. Where I could also go through an extra thing to make a FET turn on instead of the relay.
Okay, all right.
Now, all that meant I needed 5 volts in a 12-volt world. Gosh, you know, there's $3 out the window I won't see again. Everything else is so much cheaper. And I thought, okay, I wonder how much that controller's going to cost me.
Yeah.
So I priced it, and I showed you a sleeve with, I think, 10 of the controllers in it.
Yeah.
And each one of these, in fact, I'm paying less, is 35 cents.
Oh, wow. 35 cents a piece. I'll tell you, those looked a lot like the old-fashioned DRAM from way back in the early days.
Although they're a lot smaller.
Yeah. But we paid a lot more than that for those. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me.
After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can, and they've got all kinds of tricks up their sleeves. My wife received the following audio, and I'll play that back right now.
This call is to authorize the payment of $1,499 for the recent order of Apple MacBook Pro on your Amazon account. If you do not authorize this payment, please press 1 to speak to our customer support representative.
Yeah, that's right. It's basic, simple, trying to get you to click 1, press 1, rather, on your phone, and then to... Oh, what? You're going to then turn over your information to them. That's usually the trick they've got going on. They send this kind of voicemail to you or message. They're hoping to catch you live, really, is what they're looking for. And they're looking for you to just go through that phone tree. And there's a lot of tension that is already built up in you. Oh, this is Amazon, and this is for a MacBook Pro. I didn't order anything like this. Why are they reaching out to me for $14.99? I'm not going to authorize this. And, yeah, of course, they're going to hit you up with all kinds of different questions that are going to reveal, yes, your credit card number, your Amazon login, whatever it is. Let's start off with the easy one. Amazon doesn't do this. They don't call you to authorize any transactions. How do I know? Well, first off, they say so. Second off, I've made purchases that were fairly high dollar with them, and no, they never validated anything like this. Now, I want you to think about this entire audio that I just played back. I want you to think about what they're doing here. They're reaching out from somewhere. And I don't care that this says Amazon on this audio. I don't care if it says Walmart. I don't care if it says the name of your bank. I don't care what the dollar amount is. I don't care for you to even hang on the line. Listen, when you get any kind of robotic voice like this, not a real person, a robotic voice, I want you to just hang up. I want you to just abandon the call completely. This is already laying up for whoever it is on the other end, the real voice that eventually comes on, to then hit you up for whatever it is. Yes, there are a few rare occasions where you might get some kind of automated voice going on, but I'll tell you, my banks, have all reached out to me for various alerts, you know, when I'm traveling or whatever, and it's always a live voice. The technology is there now so that they can queue up a couple of different calls. They're not going to give you a robotic voice. They're going to give you a real person who's there, and they're not going to provide anything that's going to scare you. They're actually going to probably, if it's your bank, say, hey, call us on our normal hotline, which is the phone number on the back of your card. They're not even going to read out a phone number. That's how attuned these people are to ensuring your security. They're going to refer you to your own reference to reaching out to the bank or to Amazon or wherever else. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Makes computers seem easy, but that pocket protector says otherwise. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, of course, if you've missed any part of this, is computertalkradio.com. Computertalkradio.com. The phone number, if you have any questions, you can, of course, you can check out the website, but you can also phone me at 888-NERD. 888, that's 888-637-3888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. Making good on that promise, I bring in Steve Keske on a regular basis, almost every week for a long time
now.
So what do you have for us to really challenge that concept of radio's broadest look at computers and technology?
Do you think we can really colonize Mars?
This is kind of a tricky proposition. It is something that is going to take a long time. It is something that is going to involve putting far more people into space than we have in the entire history up until now. I don't know where we're at with the total amount of people who've been to what we used to call space, which was anything over 100 miles, because there have been some various jets that have gone over that 100-mile mark, and there have been a few people who've touched that edge and returned, and then a few that didn't.
And just a few.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what the number is off the top of my head. Here's the thing. We're going to have to, for Mars to be self-sufficient, the people that say that really figure out all of these numbers that say to develop a truly self-sufficient community that will last for decades and millennia on end, we have to put 1 million people on Mars.
That's
now,
true.
Of course, some of those can come the old-fashioned way.
That's true, too.
But so can we do that? Can we get enough people there to start on that path? And along with that, what are going to be the people that are going to go there? And when I start thinking about this, I start thinking, okay, we're going to go to Mars. Okay, that's going to take a lot of money per individual.
Yes, it is.
And each individual that's going to go, in our modern society, I think of, you know, the people we've sent to space have been the cream of the crop.
Yep.
They have not typically been your janitors, your cooks, your various low-level employees, not to diminish any of those people. They're all needed in life.
Yep.
For us to figure that out to get that there. That is going to be one of the biggest hurdles we're going to have to come across, the barriers to cross ahead of us.
But before you get the people there, you got to remember that you have problems with radiation. Problems with, well, they think they've got enough water. Then you've got to have problems with agriculture and mm-hmm. all of this yes. that you've got to, you know, go through before you get to importing a whole lot of people.
Yeah. Well, there is so much ahead of us. One of the biggest things that has been discussed is how much we're going to have to put on Mars before we even put a person in that direction. And that direction is not a short trip.
That is
6 to 9 months is the estimate to get there. And the round trip is a total of 3 years because you have to wait until Mars gets back into a suitable position.
Which is once every 26 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty rough there.
It's really rough. But, you know, I have did a little research.
Yeah.
As you know, I do. On most subjects that I talk about.
Yes.
Anyway, the biggest thing and problem that we'll have is that Mars is way down around 3/8 of the gravity of Earth.
Yes. Yes.
Therefore, our whole physiology will change the longer you're there.
Yes. So you're going to move from 0G. Having been in 0G for that 6 to 9 months, you're then going to go to that 3/8 gravity, which is a lot better than the full gravity that we have.
Oh, yeah. But then, just to let the listeners know, if you weigh 160 pounds at 3/8 of the gravitational pull, you drop down to 60 pounds.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And then, so we also have to figure in with that, there are going to have to be facilities there. So they are sending, SpaceX has a long-term plan of sending a lot of rockets that way.
Yeah.
To build the facilities, the raw materials, and then we have to have a pressurized atmosphere inside of those facilities. And if you venture outside, the atmosphere is some 1% of what we have here. It's a different...
And mostly CO2.
Yeah. It's a different concentration of all of the different things there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's also... concern for radiation on Mars, because it's a different atmosphere,
and because there's less gravity, there's more radiation getting through.
Yeah, they also have the issue of it's slightly chilly there at the equator. I learned something interesting in the last few weeks. At the equator, it is 32 degrees. On a good day, and beyond that, because of the low level of atmospheric pressure, the boiling point of water is also 32 degrees.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting point where a crossover point where you can have solid ice, liquid water, and steam all occurring at the same time. Yeah, that'll be a very interesting thing to see people study. So, yeah, do I think we can do it, though? Let's go back to your original question. I think we can at least set up some level of an outpost, a level of research that is going to go towards... towards a longer term future out amongst the stars. I don't know that we are going to find it hospitable in my mind enough to say, yeah, let's just hang out here instead of moving on.
I think a certain percentage of the people that are going there are going to say, wait a minute here. I don't need to go any further. I like it here.
Yeah.
And getting back to my really big deal about the gravity.
Yeah.
I said to myself, do you think there is a way to increase the gravity on Mars?
Okay.
And the answer to that is yes, there are two ways to increase gravity.
Mm-hmm.
That is, increase the density of the core.
Mm-hmm.
And, or...
increase the mass, okay.
That increases the mass, the density.
We're going to have to send a lot of rockets for that.
Well, no, not necessarily.
No, go on.
Or you increase the amount of heat in the core.
Okay.
Because heat creates molten rock, and molten rock creates more density.
Okay.
So that also can increase the gravity. So if we double the gravity that exists right now on Mars, you go from 3/8 to 6/8, which is 3/4 of what we have on Earth.
I think that kind of concept scares me. It kind of scares me, like a couple of the different, I don't recall it being in the original book, but a couple of different takes on the on H.G. Wells' time machine.
Yeah.
Have included the moon having broken apart because we made a few mistakes messing around with the moon and that. It'd be kind of a bummer to do that to Mars.
What?
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh, yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh, yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. One of the more enjoyable things that I have done in this last year is set up a brand new NAS from Synology, the 923 Plus, and it has been a wonderful experience. I am very cognizant of the fact that it is a more advanced item than most people need. So later on in the year, about a month and a half ago, they sent me a B drive. The B drive is kind of the junior level. It's not a NAS. It does allow for some connectivity to your smartphone, and it does a great job at backing up your system. And that is a great idea for people who just need a nice, simple backup solution. There needs to be kind of that in-between point, though. There needs to be something that's as easy as the B drive, has some of those capabilities of sitting on your network and being able to set up a cloud solution for yourself so you can access your files via wherever you are in the world, and the full-fledged NAS. And there is. There absolutely is. Synology sent me out the B station, and the B station, it's absolutely amazing how easy it is to set up. It is a cloud-based 4 terabyte hard drive that sits on your network. And you can connect up to it on your network, but you can be anywhere around the world and connect up to all of the different things. I will tell you, for all of the power that it's doing, for everything that it's doing along the way, it sits very nicely in between the two different levels there. The full-fledged NAS, where I can run Plex and I can run Home Assistant and a few other things on there, and it has a lot of drives in it, and that small little hockey puck that is the B drive. So this B station is something that I approached this with the idea of, what level of experience do you need to set up what is essentially a junior NAS station? Now that's kind of what I would refer to it as. It's kind of a junior NAS, a network attached storage. That's what NAS stands for, NAS. And I was prepared to jump through a couple of hoops to try to figure out a couple of different things along the way, because I have dealt with technology for so long that I have this preconceived notion with a lot of technology that you have to have some level of experience. You have to have some level of troubleshooting experience. This is something that, you might want to set up for your grandparents in their home. You might want to set it up so that they've got that ability to reach out to it. I was wrong on this very important basis. I was so very wrong. This was easy peasy to set up. Oh, and when I say easy peasy, it was a matter of, okay, plug it into the network, plug it into power, and then you go to, you've got a couple of options. The instruction manual is, what is this? This is not really, it's a trifold brochure, but half size trifold brochure. It's got the trifold in it, and it's a quick start guide. And I open it on up, and all it's got is two methods. Method one, scan the QR code. Method two, enter the URL below into a web browser. Done. That's it. It then walks you the rest of the way through everything. And when I say everything, so the next step, it told me, okay, press and hold the power button for 4 seconds. Okay, I do that. And it says, okay, wait till the light turns orange. Okay, it turned orange. All right. We're going to go through and we're going to set this up. Sit back here for 15 minutes. We're going to download the latest firmware onto this. It's okay. We got this. We're going to take care of all of this for you. Okay, great. All right. Boom. You're done. Here's the drive. Okay. Click here if you want to set it up on your local system so you can basically upload files to it. No, okay. But there was a cool feature off to the side, which I then chased after next. And this is where it got even more fun. It said, we will sync up to your Microsoft OneDrive, we'll sync up to Google Drive, we'll sync up to Dropbox. I'm figuring, okay, I'm going to have to jump through a various amount of hoops. I've done this kind of stuff before to sync up to Dropbox. You've got to answer some questions, you've got to type in the passwords, and you got to do a few different hoops along the way. No. It basically said, click here, okay, click there, and it was done, and it started syncing up. I said, okay, and I did that with Dropbox first. I said, all right, it's syncing, I'll connect up to my Google Drive. We'll do that next. Bump, 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 done. Okay, that was amazing. OneDrive, bump, 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 done. Huh? So I'm here syncing all of these different cloud providers of storage in a matter of probably 2 minutes. It took so much longer to download everything that I've got from out there in the cloud, because it has to download it all and it has to put it in there. But otherwise, it's configured. It's done. I just had to wait for it to complete. I was dumbfounded at how easy this was. So look, let me break it down. This is probably one of the most user-friendly setups that I've come across. And the B drive was easy as could be. This was just as easy. And, this is this is going to be a key thing for a lot of people, is making sure it's user-friendly. This was that. It's 4 terabytes in size. It's just the same size as any other standard external hard drive. No big deal there. You can go through, and there are a couple of different options for plugging in. You can plug in a flash drive. And I did this with the 923. There was a little bit of minor, you had to load in a little app, and you had to do a little bit of minor configuration. Not a big deal, but on the beef station, it just automatically does this. And so I connected on up. I wanted to connect up via remote. So I went to that QR code that they have in the quick start guide. Took the little QR code. It then asked, okay, what's your username? Okay, what's your password? Boom. Connected up. It downloaded the app. And all I had to do then, I was cruising through all of this stuff. Now, mind you, this was on my data plan. This was not on my Wi-Fi. So I could access. I do this all the time to test out access. I'll connect up to a hotspot, or I'll just use the phone directly. Whatever it is that I'm doing, I make sure that when they say cloud capable, it truly is. This was so easy. It was such a dream. This was in plain, simple, very simple stuff. One of the easiest things I could ever deal with. I am loving this. And I have no doubt that most everybody listening to me can handle this. They can, the technical expertise required on this is none. You got to be able to read, past like a third grade level. That's about it. So it runs generally about $220, but I will tell you that some of the other items that are coming from Synology are going to be highlighted this coming Black Friday, Cyber Monday season. There's a couple of different things across the board from Synology. They've got some good discounts. This particular drive, the B station, is not on my list here. It's a lot of stuff in regards to the drive stations and their Wi-Fi routers and stuff like that. But they've got some good, healthy discounts. So keep an eye out. Amazon's going to be offering the 723 Plus at a 20% discount. The RT6600AX, that's the latest router. That's going to be at 240. And that's at Amazon. B&H Photo, Newegg, and a few others are all involved with this as well. By all means, again, check out the B station. It is absolutely wonderful as that nice middle ground between the B drive and the Synology NAS 923 Plus that I got sitting right here. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Charlie's question is one that actually saddens me a little bit because it shows how the world is shifting in our usage of one particular technology. Charlie reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. You can do it too. Just scroll down to where it says contact us today. More than happy to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. So let's go into Charlie's question. It was a longer item, but one question, his closing question, where do we sit with the digital camera industry when phones are coming out with such powerful lenses and capabilities? And the reality is, it's not good. It's not good if you like a dedicated camera. It's not good if you like the functionality, the features, all of the amazing things that these cameras, these standalone cameras, can provide, because there's so much that comes close to what we want in our smartphones. Once, long ago, Mount Olympus became the namesake for a camera company you know as Olympus, or maybe you used to know as Olympus. Kodak, Polaroid, Canon, Nikon, they each were big, huge, mighty companies, and they were facing the whole just advance of the digital future. And since then, Kodak and Polaroid, they've abandoned the film market. And Canon and Nikon, they've gone ahead and they've been pushing DSLRs for a long time, but their sales are a lot lower than what they used to be. To what extent? Let me tell you, including mirrorless cameras, we go back 10 years, just 10 years ago, 2014. By the end of the year, 47 different cameras were released across a number of these different manufacturers. 47 brand new cameras. In 2024, 6. That's it. That in itself tells me what's going on with the camera industry. There are different areas for these cameras and in different places where we can still utilize them. And I'll go into some of the things that still tell me that we're going to see these around, but not in the end user, the typical consumer realm. They're going to be mostly in more of those professional realms. But it's also going to require the upkeep of these lines by the big names that are still in there. Sony's dropped out, and a number of others. Basically, it's Canon and Nikon are the big leaders still, even though their lines, both of their lines, are somewhere around 40%, I would say, combined of what they were 10 years ago. So we've got Nikon, Fujifilm, Canon. Sony released their last of digital cameras earlier this year, and they said it's their last. And Canon has also stated a couple of times that they're getting ready to just quit the game. Canon! They're getting ready to leave. Anyways, there are the professional markets. There are niche markets that are still going to exist for quite a while. The dedicated camera market does continue to serve professionals and prosumers who want that higher image quality that comes from a lens that is far larger. The pickup, the sensor on those cameras, is so much better than what you're going to find in your phone. There's also the versatility. There are the different advanced features. Yes, we are getting more and more of these different items with the software that is available on the Android, on the iPhone systems, but it's not going to really hold that market. Let me rephrase that. It's not going to be beneficial for any of the big camera companies to compete in that area, because most people have a camera they've already spent $1,000 on or so in the form of an iPhone. So we'll already start off and say, and we're seeing this, the high-end cameras, they're going to stick around. Anything under the price of your smartphone is likely to be gone in a matter of a few years. We're already seeing that. We've seen that shift over the course of the last 10 years. There are specialized use cases. There are various things like sports and astrophotography and the various professional video productions. We've seen kind of a shift over to the mirrorless for that. But those are specialty items. And those are, I mean, yes, they're indispensable. Those types of cameras are going to be great for people who are passionate hobbyists and for professionals. But for the run-of-the-mill people, you and I mean, I still have a DSLR and I do use it. However, I don't use it anywhere near as often because I don't want to lug the thing around. But yeah, I'll use it here and there. The key thing for any of these camera companies to stay around, to stay in business, is going to be innovation and adaptation. They need to come up with a lot more of those features that are coming through the systems of the smartphones, and I don't know that they are keeping up with it. Yes, there's better focusing. There's better what we call the depth of field, or rather reduced depth of field. They produce that bokeh effect, that nice little fuzzy stuff around the edges when you're focused on, yes, that one particular person. But we've got another thing that's really approaching in the industry that's already duplicating that, and that's AI. And they're able to take your pictures that you do on your iPhone and add that in. So, yeah. For now, I think established camera brands, they've got some loyalty still left, and there is a community of enthusiasts who are going to prefer the experience offered by those standalone cameras, but the convenience, the constant evolution of these smartphone cameras, and the big line by every smartphone company out there that ours is, you know, a gazillion megapixels or whatever, you know, that they're pushing so hard on that and saying you don't have to buy another camera, that the camera industry itself is losing and probably already is lost. It's unfortunate. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of that in between. And this past week, there was a re-interview of a gentleman off in India. He is an owner of a company and a founder of the company, rather. And he said basically for work-life balance, 70-hour work weeks are ideal. 70 hours a week. I'll get into that in a minute. But first, let's unpack who this person is. Now, you're thinking, okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about some small company off in India. We're talking about some company that maybe has a few thousand employees, maybe even as many as 10,000. Okay, they employ a lot of people sometimes in India, so maybe it's even 15,000. No, when we start talking about company sizes, when we start looking at them, this company is the number 47 employer in the world. They have roughly 320,000 employees around the world. You know, we start thinking about some of these larger companies that employ a lot of people, like Walmart at 2.1 million and Amazon at 1.5 million. So we start going down the line. 47th on that list is this company. This is not an insignificant company. You may have heard their name before. It's Infosys. And the founder's name, Narayama Murthy. So 70 hours is work-life balance to him. I saw that, and having burned out, I burned out a number of years ago, and I've put that past behind me, and it was shocking to me at the age that I burned out. I was not expecting to burn out, but then again, I was working a matter of 12 to 16 hours a day, Monday through Friday. I had a 1 hour each way commute. And then I was also putting in a number of hours on Saturday, generally about 10. And then on Sunday, maybe 6 to 8 hours. So, yes, I was burning the candle at both ends and did not have a whole lot of time for my wife and my son. Let's unpack those numbers. Let's think about that kind of work day. So, for starters, 70 hours a week, that's 10 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week. But let's bump that up. Let's just take it to 6 days a week, 70 hours a week. What does that result in? Yeah, roughly a 12-hour day, Monday through Saturday. That's a lot of hours. Let's take one of those days. Let's just break that down. So 24 hours. And then we're going to subtract 12 hours. You're working every day, you know, for those 6 days. And then you're going to subtract, let's subtract just 1 hour for commute, the half hour each way. And let's subtract 8 hours for our sleep every night. Let's subtract out another hour for basic lunch at the office. So let's also subtract out, yes, time to get up and prepare for your day, have a meal, have a nighttime meal before going to bed, your shower, everything you do, all of that has to come in that, because you only have 1 more hour left, 1 hour to spend with your wife, your family. At a certain point, we need to think about this. We need to think about what kind of life that leaves behind. I'll tell you, to me, that reeks of slavery. That reeks of the idea that your life is work, to work constantly. Oh, yes, you get Sunday off. Maybe, you know, maybe because this company does a lot of contract work around the world, maybe you might only get a Saturday off. Maybe you get a Wednesday off to do everything else in your life, because that 1 hour isn't going to be enough. That 1 hour a day for the remaining days, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket. This Narayama Murthy has an idea that he feels that he needs to research by pushing everybody at his company, at least that he can legally push, for the next 20 to 30 years. He's actually stated he doesn't even believe in work-life balance. He basically believes that all Indian citizens need to work these kinds of hours to make India successful. And, of course, him. So he's the founder of the company. He is no longer the CEO. There are other people who are driving the company forward, but he's still part of this company. He's still pushing this along because, yes, he is in one of the largest companies in the world. So let's think about this. Let's apply the worst case scenario constantly in our thoughts as to what people are thinking out there, that we should all be beholden to them for our jobs, and we should rely on them to decide what is our balance, what is our work-life balance overall. This is rather shameful. I can't even believe he would say this. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Sean asked me, what are your tips in regards to Black Friday and Cyber Monday? And I'll tell you, the best tip I've got. slow down. Take it easy. Really think it through. Each purchase. It is very easy to get lost in a lot of these different options, different things that are coming at us. We've got a lot of tension in us. We've got to buy gifts for everybody in the family, all of the friends that we're buying gifts for and all of that. And it's too easy for us to turn this into a chore where we're trying to get so many things done. Slow down. Think it through. Think through everything you've got. But that's usually not the tips people are looking for. That's just my first opening salvo in this. Next up, I've seen a lot of different companies going through and saying, if you give us your email address, we'll give you a 10%, 20%, whatever percent discount on one item, on your whole order, whatever. I would say if you've got the ability to do disposable addresses, then do that. This is one of the tips I use. I've got a number of different domains, and I set up email addresses. Actually, it's one email address where I send all of this kind of stuff to. So if I ever need to go back, I ever need to reference it, I can. And it goes off into essentially an electronic round file. It just goes there and eventually it will disappear. And that's how I've got it set up. So take advantage of those options. Usually, there's a lot of different loyalty programs and things like that that you can deal with. I would also suggest if you are looking for particular items, set up deal alerts. And a lot of different things are out there that can help you with this. There's programs out there. But even if you just put something into your Amazon cart, for instance, they will tell you if there's a deal that comes up. Hey, there's an item in your wish list, in your shopping cart, whatever it is, that's on sale right now. And that really helps, especially if you want to do some pre-planning. Of course, there's a lot of Black Friday sales that are already in progress. But when we get to Black Friday, when we get to Cyber Monday, there's going to be things that are on sale alongside of those. So think it through. Avoid any of those impulse buys, especially when we're talking about no-name brands. You've got XYZ on your list. I don't care what it is. You've got I've got a computer keyboard in front of me right now, so I'll use this as an example. This is a brand name keyboard that's in front of me. It's from Rockhat. If I have a Rockhat keyboard, I do not, that's on my list, I do not want to buy some off-brand keyboard that happens to be a better price, even though it looks the same, even though it might be very similar. No, you want to stick with those brand names that you are really sure on. Don't gamble on tech. Don't buy the weird stuff. Those are my big items. I'm sure you have more, but use them through this holiday season. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.